And a good day to you on this Wednesday, August the 14th in the year of our Lord 2013. I'm Pastor Tom Baker. You're listening to Law and Gospel on Worldwide KFUO. And today, being a Wednesday, it's Insight Wednesday, where we attempt to bring in some insights that you normally don't hear about. And particularly, I'm looking forward to today because I have a somewhat of an expert on this insight that I'm somewhat ignorant of. So I'm as anxious to hear about what he has to say as you might be, according to our promo. The communication culture today is known as TIGIF, referring to Twitter, Google, iPhone, and Facebook. And our guest knows a little bit about how to communicate with these people, or at least what the differences are. And his name is Pastor Will Miller, and he is pastor at Messiah Lutheran Church on Grand Avenue in St. Louis. Good day, Will.
Great to be here.
What I'd like to ask you is, first of all, what is your main task at Messiah Lutheran Church?
Well, I'm the outreach pastor there, but that includes not only outreach to folks who have lived in the neighborhood for years, it also includes many folks from the immigrant and refugee community. So
currently, most of the immigrants and refugees that we're working with are Bhutanese refugees.
What did you say, Bhutanese?
Bhutanese, yeah.
I don't understand that word.
Okay. They share a border with India. They're in the Himalayas. It's a small nation. And there are ethnically Nepali people who used to live there. They were invited there by the government. And after a while, the government decided they wanted these folks to leave. So they politely, with a gun, asked them to leave,
really?
And they went back to Nepal, but it had been over 100 years or something. So the UN set up refugee camps. These folks have been living in these refugee camp conditions for over 20 years, some of them, and now they're coming here to the United States, also here to St. Louis, and we at Messiah have been reaching out to these folks.
You're right near what's called Tower Grove Park, a huge park.
Yeah, I love that park.
Every time I go by it, they're playing some crazy game with, looks like a big soccer ball or something that they're kicking around. But
that's how a lot of wrecks happen.
Yeah,
people are driving down Arsenal or something. They say, oh, look, dodgeball. And,
yeah. I do know that south of there's some really beautiful houses.
Yes, there are.
We just had a good friend move into them. Where do these folks live? In regard to Tower Grove Park?
Well, the International Institute is down on South Grand, near Gravoy, where it crosses South Grand. And so the resettlement zone for most of the immigrants and refugees, it doesn't really matter where you're coming from, is within a 2-square-mile radius of the International Center. So that, well, this is the International Center, right? The International Institute. So that the refugees and immigrants have an easy time getting to see their social workers.
Good.
And getting to English classes, that sort of thing. So,
is there a language difference with those folks? Do they speak English?
Or? They speak Nepali. That was part
Nepali.
That was part of the problem. They refused to totally switch over to Bhutanese as a language.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it bred maybe a little bit of distrust.
When I was at St. James Lutheran University City for some 28 years, one of the ways we were bringing in more people, we had an English language school.
Right.
Do you have something like that?
We don't. Our model is a little bit different. We're trying very hard to integrate all the different ethnicities that we have so that we don't have a church within a church situation.
Right.
Some folks can fully integrate different populations within their church body, within their congregation. And I've seen other congregations that have a harder time doing that. So they just say, well, this is your space and this is our space.
But if they only speak Nepal, how are they able to integrate into an English-speaking congregation?
Well, the young people pick up English pretty quickly.
Yeah, okay.
Just about as quickly as they pick up cell phones and blue jeans. So
I'm just helping a church start an English language school, but we're using biblical materials to do it.
Okay.
It's really interesting. So you're really doing two things. They're first of all learning biblical Christianity, which from my point of view is no different than Lutheranism. And then they're also learning English.
Right.
And we can integrate them right into, you know, worship or at least adult instruction as such. But What we're here to talk about, an article that a professor from the seminary was handing out, written by you, simply about the fact that social networking, there's a different way to communicate with those people, specifically on Twitter, Google, iPhone, Facebook. Can you give a little summary, and then we'll get into more details as to what you see the specific differences in communicating with them in contrast to the way we used to do it?
Well, I guess the biggest difference is that the conversation never really ends when you're heavily into social media. So whereas at one point you met someone face-to-face, you'd have a conversation, and then you'd walk away. Or, you know, with the advent of the telephone, you can phone someone, but then you hang up. In social media, there's never really a point where you hang up. The conversation just keeps going on and on and on, and you may pop in, you may pop out. But someone that you just got through texting on your phone, you might then say, make a comment on their latest Twitter comment. Mm-hmm. So it just keeps going. It almost becomes its own sort of living organic thing, this constant conversation that's happening between people.
Are you speaking specifically of chat rooms?
No, I'm not talking about chat rooms. I'm just talking about whether you're on Facebook or whether you're Instagramming a photo or whether you're commenting on someone's Twitter comment. Social media has become sort of all pervasive. It is, if you're a fish, it's water. this is really the way people are communicating with one another today, and it allows people to stay in constant contact with one another.
Explain what you mean in your article between the distinction, the ministry of presence and a ministry of absence.
Well, that's really a comment that I picked up from Henry Nouwen, and I talked about him just briefly in the article. But Henry Nouwen talked about a pastoral ministry from the perspective of a ministry of presence and a ministry of absence. Pastors are around, and they need to be around for people. But there also is an appropriate time to sort of not be around, because people can become maybe a little too dependent on simply the pastor's presence. And they sort of stop seeing the pastor's presence as a means whereby Christ is present in a specific way. But really, this is just one more way in which Christ is present with you. But when the pastor's presence is removed for a period of time, folks are in a situation where they have to go back and rely on the presence of Jesus, and they have to really think about what that means. When I talk about ministry of presence and a ministry of absence as it relates to social media, I'm now using the term differently than Henry Nouwen did. And what I'm talking about is there's a real thing that some people suffer from. It's called nomophobia. It's the fear of not having your cell phone, your smartphone with you at all times.
What's it called?
Nomophobia.
Nomo?
Yeah, nomophobia, right? And it's an actual thing. And some people experience it when they don't have their smartphone device with them or something. They don't feel plugged in, right? Well,
recently I came here and I forgot my phone. Yeah. And what bothered me, I didn't know what my wife was doing.
Right. See, you never hang up. You've got constant contact. Well, some people feel that way. And with social media, if you've got a pastor who's savvy to some of these changes that are going on in the way that people are communicating, he can stay in touch with people all the time. You have pastors today who are shooting out little Twitter messages, Instagramming photos, giving people a thought or a Bible verse for the day, linking that in with their Facebook page so that people are seeing it on their news feed on Facebook. So these are guys who are constantly staying in touch with their people in a really positive way. I mean, it's great to have the Word of God, you know, pop up on your news feed, you know. Mm-hmm. But there can be this sort of sense with some people, not all people, that, you know, okay, I'm used to my pastor always being reachable, always being present, always being around, and it can breed a sort of unhealthy relationship where I'm completely dependent upon the pastor rather than seeing the pastor's presence as one more way in which Jesus is present. And I stop being so focused on Jesus' presence in my life, and I'm just constantly looking for the pastor to just be there and be reachable all the time. I don't think that that's healthy for pastor or people. I'm not advocating pastors who are not reachable. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that there is a need for people to have those moments when they remember, oh, that's right, it's really my Lord who's present with me all the time. And when pastor's around, that's one more way in which my Lord is present with me to bring his word into my life.
Would that not really depend on the content of the tweets, et cetera, that the pastor is doing? If he's emphasizing himself or giving his own advice, they would become somewhat addicted to him, whereas mm-hmm. if he's always pointing to Christ
right.
in his tweets, is that a way to get around that?
I think it's part of the way to get around it. It's part of the way to get around it.
Do you do that on Twitter, put things out every day?
I've tried it with people who go through my core class, which is my Christian doctrine class. It's for people who have never gone through the basics of Christian doctrine. And so prospective new members, people are just curious from the neighborhood. They don't have to join the church after this. They just go through the class. I've tried to stay in touch with some of them on Twitter. With the people that we've been working with, it didn't really fly. So Facebook was much more effective.
How so?
Well, they just kept up with Facebook in a way that mm-hmm. they weren't keeping up with the Twitter account. But that's not every place. I've talked with pastors from other places, especially if you're maybe in Southern California or maybe hipper towns. I hate to say that because we're in yeah. St. Louis, but yeah, maybe Boulder, Colorado or something. And or a college town, there may be people who keep up a little bit better with those kinds of just short messages, just bullets, just boom, 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 rather than keeping up with their Facebook feed the same way.
I'm a little leery of Facebook. I had a little course, and part of it was you had to open up a Facebook account.
Right.
And so I did, and within 4 days, I had 160 likes. I mean,
oh, wow.
I didn't even know about it.
Right, yeah.
You know, mainly the radio program. I couldn't keep up.
Right, sure.
So this is almost like another job.
Well, that's what I mean when I say it's constant. It's if you're a fish, it's water. It doesn't seem overwhelming to people of a certain generation, certainly, and younger. They are growing up with this. So this is just the way that it is. You know, this is the way that you communicate. And it's the way that you approve of your friends and what they like. You like it too. It's there's a little bit of even peer pressure that goes into to some of these expressions online.
I'm familiar with a friend of mine who was a Coptic priest in Egypt, mm-hmm. Disagreed with the theology, became a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod pastor.
Okay.
His ministry is primarily on the internet with Muslims.
Okay.
And he can... Would you suggest a possibility of every now and then you have some seminaries don't have a call, but if they're somewhat good with a computer, could you actually do a ministry on the internet where you would be full-time on Facebook, Twitter? Would you recommend something like that, or how would it work?
I would not recommend that. I'm sure somebody could do it if they could entrepreneur that sort of ministry. I think that social media should be used as a helper and aid. I think it helps you to stay in touch with your people. One of the things that I wrote in the article was simply pointing to the fact that community is amorphous and mobile. So whereas community was dependent at one time upon people getting together in a group at one place, at one time, agreed mm-hmm. upon time, Facebook, for example, allows you to have community that's sort of ongoing, but it's online. So you can right. be on vacation and you're Instagramming your photos. You've got it. You've got it in your news feed on Facebook as well, and so people can see what you're doing even when you're in another city. And you know, it's sort of the old joke: you don't show your vacation photos. But for some reason, in this format, people like it. It's not 80 photos. It's 4 or 5, and they...
Yeah,
and
I did a... it's kind of a PowerPoint video, and the first thing I was told, I needed to have my face on it at the beginning.
Right.
Because when you have your face, they say there's a trust that begins to grow.
Right.
And so I can imagine what you're saying with photos from the vacation.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real trust. But boy, isn't that somewhat dangerous to have your kids on the internet or pictures of them? Or how do you get around that problem?
Well, I don't think you do. I don't think you do. And that is another point that I brought out in the article, is that everyone's accessible all the time.
Yeah.
And that is a reality today. And so you do need to be careful. There are some steps you can take. I fudge a little bit with my personal information. So I put my wrong birth date or something by a year or the wrong month or something. So that principally to avoid fraud, because people, if they can find your information in enough places. There are problems when you've got young kids.
Yes.
I know people who... young girls especially, who have had their images taken off the internet and used inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes lawsuits come from it and that sort of thing, if you can catch the people. But someone can do this from China. Someone can do this from Congo. Someone can do this from wherever, because the internet is worldwide. But it's a reality that we live with. You know, I live in the city. I live on Tower Grove Park, actually, on Arsenal. And, you know, people have different opinions about St. Louis. Some people say, well, it's getting better. Or some people say, oh, what are you, crazy? It's dangerous here. We've never really had a problem. That being said, I'm not going to send my daughter out into the middle of large Tower Grove Park.
Right.
And say, just come back in an hour or two and check in.
Right.
You'd be silly to do that. That's the reality we live with.
Mm-hmm.
So I lock my doors at night. I'm careful online. It's not going to stop me from going out. It's not going to stop me from getting online. And I don't think it should stop pastors from being where their people are. And where their people are today is also in this virtual world.
So the ministry, and I know exactly what you're talking about, because my radio program, I get a lot of emails, and they're from Australia and Asia.
Right.
And there's no way I can say, I'll meet you this week in the church.
Right.
Whereas only church gives baptism in the Lord's Supper.
Right.
So how do you make that crossover? Do you try and get them affiliated with a church near them, or?
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, it's just about, this is the ministry of presence rather than the ministry of absence. It's about making that personal connection. So you talk about trust online, you know, putting your photo up. That's a great way to go.
Yeah.
But just staying in touch with people, knowing what's going on in their lives, because you kept up with their news feed on Facebook, you know what's going on. You know, Messiah is kind of a funny congregation in this respect, at least. I've noticed that at this particular congregation, people don't always want to tell their pastors when they're going into the hospital.
Mm.
But they'll put it on their news feed. So,
interesting.
If I'm working at my home office, I'll just keep Facebook open. I'm not on it, you know, the whole time, but it's open. Like
right.
When you walk into the Federal Bureau of Investigation, they got CNN playing on the TV. It's just open so mm-hmm. that you've got the news feed. And a lot of times that's how you'll find out, oh my goodness, so-and-so has a procedure today. And then, you know, I can call Mike O'Kine, the senior pastor, and say, hey, did we know this? You know.
Now, usually the people that kept secret from me, the pastor, their surgery, they kept secret from everybody. What's this strange thing where
they put it online? I guess I'd have to do some research. I don't know why, but they'll put it online even if they won't call the office.
They almost think it's anonymous.
It's a funny thing that happens to people, I think, psychologically. They think that this isn't public space. This is the largest public square you'll ever going to visit, is the online conversation.
One of the fascinating things you said is, and you already mentioned a little bit, is yet the end goal isn't to, a lot of times they don't become Lutheran, because it's a thing of participation, it's an ongoing dialogue and this sort of thing. Is there a possibility of putting out PowerPoint presentations with doctrine explained, or will they look at that stuff, or?
You know, that gets to the heart of, you know, how we're communicating our doctrine, and an image is certainly powerful, and if you can create some sort of video that speaks to your doctrine, I think that's maybe mildly effective with some people. PowerPoints, frankly, are already a little passe, and I hate to have to say that, but it's the truth. And I'm not sure people would necessarily always pay a lot of attention to something like
that.
Did
you get a chance to see that video I sent you?
No.
Oh.
No, I didn't. I think we got the wrong address. We need to clarify that after the interview today. Well, I think we've got the wrong address, so we need to...
No, because I downloaded after I sent it to you, clicked it, and went right up.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
So there's something wrong with your computer or something.
I'll check it again today.
I don't know. Okay. But I would have been interested in your... We can talk about that later.
Right.
Even though it's based on PowerPoint, it's interluded with video and...
No, see, I think that's more effective.
Animation.
I think that's more effective. You've got to sort of come at it from multiple angles. You know, if you look at commercials today, or you look at what's being put up on YouTube, people are able to take in an amazing amount of information through images, words, sounds, music, all put together in a montage pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And those bite-sized chunks are important to getting the message across.
Yeah, I've heard all the way from 3 minutes to 5 minutes should be about your extent.
The crazy thing about taking this communications class with Dr. Nielsen over at the seminary was that I learned that my personal website that I have put up, where I've got my blog and all mm-hmm. of that, it's too long. I had no idea it was too long.
Mm-hmm.
And just learning that today people, they read in smaller chunks. You can't put this long thing up there. They're not going to read all the way through.
Yeah, it depends. There are some folks out there that give out software that used to cost $1,000. Mm. They give it out for actually $15.
Oh, wow.
And they have a very lengthy thing you scroll down.
Okay, yeah.
they got a video in the middle, and it's very interesting scrolling down because you not only learn everything that the software can do,
mm-hmm.
which I'm always interested in. So for somebody like me, I'll plunk the $7 down
right.
Because it's now going to really save me some time. For instance, I put books up on Amazon.com Kindle.
Right.
It used to take like 2 hours. Well, now I have a program mm-hmm. where all I do is I just copy the chapters in, tell what the heading is, do a little other things. 15 minutes, it's up. It's
right.
Unbelievable. And it cost me $19.
So because of the PhD program that I'm in at the seminary, I'm finished with my coursework now, but I've been doing coursework for the last 2 years. I didn't graduate that long ago, 2008.
Uh-huh. Right.
With my MDiv.
That's an eternity on the internet.
It's an eternity, and it's an eternity in the classroom. So I get back, and I see these students today, and we used to drag in our backpacks and our briefcases, and we had all our books with us, and all these guys are opening their laptops, or more often than not, they have a tablet device.
Yes, right.
And I thought, what are they doing? Are they checking their Facebook page? Are they playing solitaire mm-hmm. instead of listening to the lecture? And I'm looking at them, and no, they have all of their textbooks on their tablet.
Right, right, exactly.
And I'm thinking, wow, that would have been a lot easier to carry to class than what we did.
No, I often said, boy, if I've been thinking, every time I was in an exegetical class where they go verse by verse,
right.
Let's say John 7:38, it would have been great to have a database, and you put that verse in and what he said about it.
Right.
And when you get out of the seminary, you got the whole Bible in order with
yeah.
every note you ever heard
right.
from the professors.
Right.
You know, right now I got to cull through all my notes and this sort of thing. But
let me just point one more thing out about the classroom. It's interesting to me. This is just another way of showing how the conversation online finds its way into everything that we do. One thing that I noticed about some of the guys is while the profs were lecturing,
mm-hmm.
and I hope some prof is listening to this because it's true. I've watched them do it. While they're lecturing now, since they've got these tablets and these laptops,
mm-hmm.
they're opening the internet to find other sources to try to verify whatever the professor just said about the Bible verse.
Right, right.
They want to see that there's another source where they can match up the information they just heard in the lecture. So in other words, they're not just being lectured to by one professor.
Exactly.
They're going to try to find someone else that can corroborate that information. That's amazing.
Well, there was a professor who told me the purpose of going to the seminary wasn't to learn anything as much, because you only go through a few Bibles,
right.
books, but rather to decide whether or not the Lutheran confessions are a correct summary,
right.
because they then will become the thing you look at first when you get out with all your questions. So
Absolutely.
It's really good that they're backing these items up. and checking out with them. So we talked a little bit about participation is important. Say just one word on tradition, that it's something they look to rather than for.
There's all these debates going on right now. People who say, well, people don't want tradition anymore, or the young people, the millennials, are coming back to tradition or something like that. What I've found is they're not coming back to tradition to adopt it wholesale any more than they go to any other source to adopt it wholesale. Every source that folks go to today, they're mining it for what interests them or what inspires them. And the same is true for Lutheran tradition or the larger Catholic tradition, you know, the Holy Catholic Church, the Holy Christian Church. They're looking to the tradition for what inspires them, for what speaks to them right now, but they're not interested in adopting it wholesale. So I think pastors shouldn't make that mistake.
Boy, there's so much more we could talk about Pastor Miller, but guess what? You hear the music?
Right.
Guess what? Didn't I tell you to go fast?
It does. Well, Tom, no, thanks for having me.
Well, I really appreciate it. Pastor Will Miller, Messiah Lutheran Church, your worship services are what time on Sunday?
10 a.m.
10 a.m. Bible study?
9 a.m.
Tomorrow we'll have Wes Reimnitz on talking about church attendance. Tom Baker, till then, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel on You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105.
Yeah.
Or email lawgospel at lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.